Good afternoon and welcome to A Public Affair. This is your host, Tanya Brito. Today on our show, we're going to be talking about UW-Madison's proposed new Badger partnership. It would be a new relationship between the University of Madison campus and state government. Today, to talk with us about this proposal, some of the responses to the proposal in the UW system, but more broadly in the state, Professor Serena Pondrum. She is the English Board of Visitors Professor of English at University of Wisconsin-Madison, and she has been a faculty member here for a long time. In fact, she was a member of the Chancellor's staff during the original merger of UW-Madison with the other system schools. She is an author of several books and articles on modern poetry, including work on T.S. Eliot, Marianne Moore, Gertrude Stein, and Ezra Pound. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And also on the line, we have with us David Giroux. He is the Executive Director, Communications and External Relations Office at UW System. David, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tanya. I also have a degree in English.
So okay, okay.
Two English.
Yes, okay. Well, then maybe we will spend some time later talking about Ezra Pound if things get boring. We've had so much going on in the press about the budget, about collective bargaining. Today's show really isn't about those topics, but it's another important proposed change that will be coming out of that process. The Chancellor, Biddy Martin, has proposed what is called the new Badger Partnership. And that partnership is one that she's been working with the governor on for several months, and he has endorsed. And so his budget bill that was introduced would, in fact, endorse this new Badger Partnership for UW-Madison. I'm going to start out by just reading a few bullet points of some major parts of what the bill would contain. It would create a new public authority effective July 1st of this year, or whenever the bill passes, create a 21-member board of trustees to oversee the university, the UW-Madison campus. Of those 21-member board of trustees, 11 will be appointed by the governor. It would give UW-Madison greater flexibility and authority over its own campus, including, for example, making the faculty and academic staff employees of the public authority, and allowing the UW-Madison to determine its own tuition and employee compensation, give them more responsibility for things like bidding and management of construction projects, and allow them to control the income that they earn through tuition, their own enterprises, and program revenues. There are some limitations to the proposal. So, for example, employees would stay in the state retirement system and health insurance plan, et cetera. And this is all sort of coupled with a corresponding budget cut that UW-Madison and the broader system would be having to absorb because of the state's fiscal issues. I think I'll stop there with the overview so we can begin to have a dialogue about these issues. And I guess I'll ask Professor Pondrum first to talk about what some of the the justifications are for this new Badger partnership. I know that UW-Madison is saying that they need more flexibility to remain an internationally competitive university, and in the face of declining state resources, it's even more important that they be able to be more nimble. And I should, as a disclaimer, just let our listeners know, I know that many who listen in regularly know this, I am a professor at UW-Madison. I'm a law professor, but I'm here in my capacity as a host of this show. And so I'm not attempting, I actually don't have an opinion yet on this issue. So this is a learning experience for me as well. So Professor Pondrum, can you start by talking about why it is that UW-Madison feels that this is something they need and they need now?
One of the things that we would gain from it is an ability to manage our own salary scales and appointment systems. That can be terribly important when we are in danger of being raided by research universities across the nation. At the present time, our hands are largely tied with respect to the development of a compensation system. We could adjust the tuition wisely. And when I say that, I mean that we would be able not to raise it as much, in fact, as has happened under the last 2 years of the Doyle budget, when it went up 19% and 20% in successive years. So, yes, we would be able to raise tuition to offset costs, but not greatly.
Okay, I'm going to stop you there because you mentioned two things, faculty salaries and tuition. As part of the new or the 2011-2013 biennial budget, the governor's proposing, if I'm remembering correctly, a 10% increase at UW-Madison each year. Is that correct? For tuition.
If the New Badger Partnership passes, that would be established by the new board.
So that would be something that is contingent on business as usual.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And on the faculty salary thing, can you talk more about how departments and colleges at UW-Madison are currently constrained with responding to competing outside offers? I mean, this is a common phenomenon where every school has to deal with their star employees being recruited away. And so the question is, are we losing people because of a lack of competitiveness that is related to state oversight or just a lack of competitiveness more generally?
When we would be able to transfer dollars from one category to another with the new flexibility that we would gain, we would be able to augment salaries when we needed to do so in order to meet outside offers much more flexibly than we can do today. Mm-hmm. Typically today, say we get a 2% cut, that's across the board and it affects everybody. We wouldn't choose to handle things in that way.
Okay. And on the tuition issue, tuition has been going up annually at UW-Madison, and in some cases that is driven by the legislature, but in some cases it's driven by individual departments imposing an additional sort of tuition differential for their schools and departments that cost students even more money. You know, it seems as though students are very concerned about tuition.
Of course, and they should be.
And they should be, that's right.
Absolutely. It's a very important issue. One of the things that I think is very important to appreciate is in the last tuition increase, which students, by the way, were asked to vote upon for the funding that went to help students get classes in bottleneck areas, they were asked if they approved use of some of that tuition money as scholarship support for students who needed financial aid to meet the new tuition. They voted yes.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we have more dollars now going for that support.
Mm-hmm. So from the, some students would argue, and not just students, but others more broadly, that to the extent that there's at least a certainly perceived trade-off of less state support for the university in exchange for greater autonomy over operations and economic issues like tuition and faculty salaries, that there's a potential for students to lose out if the university, you know, sees the students as a potential source of revenue, and that we lose some potential legislative oversight because even though the legislature in some years might increase tuition more than we want, in other years they might in fact limit the tuition increases that might be imposed.
One of the things we need to see is that the interest of the university runs strongly to maintaining access.
Mm-hmm.
That is one of the accountability measures that the governor has in that bill. But we don't want to lose students from the state of Wisconsin. And we have had leadership over a number of years now that has consistently said that the goal would be to be somewhere in the mid-range of Big Ten tuitions,
mm-hmm.
not something astronomical, not try to peg it at Michigan or something like that, somewhere in the mid-range.
And right now we're actually best value.
Right now we're very near the bottom. Right.
We're near the bottom.
But let me illustrate something else that would be advantage to students. Most of them probably didn't know that $10.8 million in program revenue was confiscated by the state in the last two-year biennium, and much of that money came from fees and charges that students paid, like at the union, or in student housing, or in rec sports. And the money was just taken. It wasn't state money. It was money students had paid in for services to them.
And so that was taken by the state
for other purposes? Yes.
Okay. In response to the your point that Chancellor Martin has said that she'd like to see us somewhere in the mid-range of our Big Ten competitor schools, One article I read said that would essentially translate into a tuition increase of about $2,700 per year per student, and that our current tuition is about $9,000 a year. But if you add in costs for room and board and books, et cetera, it gets to more like $20,000 a year. And I'm wondering for the students who are lower income, first-time students to go to college, minority students who don't necessarily have a lot of access and resources to absorb this additional cost, is there anything in this New Badger partnership that is designed to ensure that those students remain, the doors remain open for those students?
Yes, there are accountability measures about access. But again, let me reiterate, we would have increased tuition less than the state increased it over the last biennium. And the consistent position of Madison faculty, Madison administration, is that it does not want to see the tuition soar. Mm-hmm. So I think, in fact, we have been more accountable about the tuition than, in fact, the state has.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, okay. I just want to remind our listeners that we're talking today about the New Badger Partnership. Our guests are David Giroux. He is Executive Director of Communications and External Relations at UW System. And here in the studio is Serena Pondrum. She's a professor of English at UW-Madison. Please feel free to call in with your comments or questions. The phone number at the station is 256-2001. David, I know that the UW system is taking a different position on this issue from UW-Madison and has essentially come forward fairly recently with a counterproposal, the Wisconsin IDEA Partnership. Can you talk a little bit about what that proposal entails?
Well, good question, Tanya. And in most parts, it overlaps with the New Badger Partnership. The idea that our public universities in Wisconsin need and deserve greater flexibility, more management freedom than they currently have, has been on the table for as long as I've been with the university, which is over 10 years now. Regents appointed by Governor Thompson and Governor McCallum and Governor Doyle have all been asking for some of the same reforms that Dr. Pondrum just described. We live and work with one of the finest university systems in the country. We coincidentally also work in one of the most heavily regulated and constrained public universities in the country. In many respects, it's amazing that we've been as successful as we've been in spite of those constraints. I think the illustration that Dr. Pondrum used about how we are constrained in the way that we title and pay our faculty and staff is a perfectly good one, where we operate in a fundamentally different market for human capital. When we post a position for a researcher or an instructor or a professor, we are getting resumes and applications for those positions from all over the country and increasingly from all over the world because people want to come work at a University of Wisconsin campus. Our money that does come to us from the state comes with a very, very narrowly defined earmarks so that if we actually save money in one area because we're smart, because we've been efficient in our operations, we're legally prohibited from moving it to another area where we may have demonstrated need. So we can't, for example, take money that we save on our utility and energy budget and apply it to retaining a star researcher or a faculty member who's teaching in an area where we have increasing course demands from our students. So we need to give our chancellors, all of them, Chancellor Martin at UW-Madison, Chancellor Telfer at UW-Whitewater, Chancellor Shields at UW-Platteville, the freedom to operate like CEOs, to say, we've got a job to do, we've got these set of resources, and let's be smart about how we manage those resources. The real difference then between the current iteration of the New Badger Partnership and what we're calling the Wisconsin IDEA Partnership is whether that should be done for all campuses or just the flagship campus, and whether we should split the flagship campus from the rest of the system in the process. I think the issues of flexibility and autonomy I see as being slightly different. We can be more flexible. We can be smarter in the way we use and manage our resources. We can be just as accountable, if not more accountable, to our taxpayers and our tuition payers without necessarily fragmenting the system. I think that fragmentation carries with it some significant risks for the UW-Madison campus, and risks for the other 25 campuses as well.
Let's talk about what some of those risks are. I know that there are a lot of existing collaborations and partnerships between the UW-Madison campus and the other campuses and the system. Would those be retained in this new model of the New Badger Partnership?
Well, I think perhaps the most important area where we collaborate is the way that we communicate with the state about our building needs, about our funding needs. And we do that through a unified governance structure and a unified budget proposal, and in most cases, a unified voice in the Capitol. I think in the future we risk greatly dividing that voice and fragmenting the voice of higher education in the state in a way that leads to unnecessary and counterproductive competition between our UW campuses. Simply put, I think I would prefer as a taxpayer and a UW alum to know that all of our campuses are working together to help Wisconsin compete with other states and other countries in the global economy rather than competing with each other over really what are increasingly scarce state resources.
So David, can you be more specific about where that competition might be? Would it be mostly in the form of how many dollars the state gives to UW-Madison relative to the other UW system campuses? Or are there other less obvious ways that, the campuses might be competing with each other?
Well, if Dr. Pondrum was around during merger, she probably knows this history much, much better than I do. But as I understand it, back in the 50s and 60s, even going back to the 40s, there was growing concern by governors from both parties, by legislators from both parties, that there was a lot of mission creep going on between what were then the University of Wisconsin schools and the Wisconsin State Universities. And in fact, at one point, the Wisconsin State Universities wanted to build a second public law school in the state.
We can't have that.
No. There were new campuses being built without regard to proximity to an existing campus nearby, and a lot of overlap and duplication of in our core mission, our academic mission. So that's an area. I think competition and duplication are a real risk. Would those things happen overnight? No. I think if the New Badger Partnership gets passed as is and it fragments the system, I think there will be an effort and a sincere effort on both sides to work collaboratively together. I don't think we need to jump to any rash conclusions there. I do think over time, independent, parallel, redundant governance structures will almost by necessity cost more money to administer and will lead to divergent views on higher education in the state rather than a more collaborative, cooperative approach where we arrive at convergent views. And so I guess I can't point to any specific areas where I know that tomorrow there will be competition over these state dollars. Let's be honest, some of that exists now. Mm-hmm. We have a system where each chancellor is advocating for his or her own interests, and to some degree there's a lot of co-opetition going on in the UW system as it is now. A little bit of cooperation, a little bit of competition, a little bit of sibling rivalry, which is not a bad thing. But ultimately, at the end of the day, we work toward a common goal and a common purpose through a common governance structure. I think that's healthy. And I want to go back to where I started. I believe firmly and vehemently that all of our campuses need the tools to manage some really significant financial challenges. You mentioned the cut to UW-Madison. In total, the University of Wisconsin and its employees, all of our campuses, all of our employees, are being hit to the tune of $340 million over the next 2 years under the proposed state budget. $250 million out of our operating budgets, out of the core mission of our public university, and another $90 million out of our employees' paychecks in the form of higher contributions for health and retirement. That you can't take that big a chunk out of higher education in the state of Wisconsin without some tangible, meaningful, significant impact on our 182,000 students. Knowing that, and knowing how significant that challenge will be, I believe Chancellor Martin needs the new tools to use those limited resources more efficiently, more wisely, to move money around, to fill the gaps where they're needed, to pay our faculty more, to keep them in the labs and in the classrooms. I think Chancellor Van Galen at UW-River Falls has the exact same challenge and the exact same needs and deserves and is ready for the exact same flexibilities.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that I've heard UW-Madison's response to the Wisconsin IDEA partnership other than Chancellor Martin saying she doesn't want the New Badger partnership to be held up by this alternative counterproposal when the state is ready to move forward on the New Badger partnership. Professor Pondrum, do you know anything more than that about how Chancellor Martin is responding to UW System's new proposal, the Wisconsin Idea Partnership?
I'm not aware of a formal response.
Uh-huh.
But what David says about the origin of merger is absolutely correct. Fred Harvey Harrington proposed to create two regional colleges, Green Bay and Parkside, in 1968. And we had merger imposed upon us 3 years later.
Mm-hmm.
That was because those were four-year regional campuses. And the other state schools came in and said, it's unfair that you're getting a different kind of funding, but these are regional campuses just like us. That's not going to happen again. Without doubt, the Green Bay and Parkside campuses are part of the system of four-year colleges. But one of the other things that David said is, I think, illustrative of one of the reasons that the New Badger Partnership needs to go forward. He said on a couple of occasions that the other campuses need the exact same thing that UW-Madison does. In fact, UW-Madison is vastly different, and vastly more complex than the missions and management problems at other system campuses. We don't need the same thing. And it's almost impossible for the system to speak on behalf of both groups.
With so many different colleges and universities within,
yes,
that you're saying, okay, we have two callers who are waiting on the line, so I'm going to take these calls, but I do want to follow up with some of what you said. Caller on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to say I'm a little bit disappointed in the chancellor, the way she's handled this. Seems like kind of backroom dealings in many ways. And in response to the comment about the amount of money this is costing the UW system, I would agree, and I would hope that UW-Madison, as well as all of the other system schools, would really stand up and take on the governor. I mean, we have Steve Nass and other people in the legislature who have just been trying to gut the university for years, and I'm a little perplexed as why there hasn't been a more ardent or vociferous response, because I feel like a lot is at stake. I am worried that this partnership that has been seems to be agreed upon in the back room is going to be a virtual privatization of the UW-Madison, and it's going to turn it into a school that's all but inaccessible to people who actually live in the state, and I'm very, very concerned about that. So I'd like to hear people speak to that. Thank you.
Okay. So the caller actually raised a couple of different issues. One is the process of coming to agreement, in her view, didn't have enough transparency and input. I think that's one point. And then another broader point about what is the outcome for UW-Madison. Is it more a kind of a private model that is inaccessible, or is it the public flagship that we have in place now? And also, why weren't UW system, for example, involved more in challenging this pattern of declining state support? So maybe I'll let David start with a response to some of those issues, and I'll give you a chance as well, Professor Pondrum.
I think the issue before us now is the state's financial crisis and its impact on higher education. I guess I'd prefer not to dwell too much on process and how we got to the spot we're in now. The spot we're in is a very difficult one, and in fact, while we do have different size institutions and different missions, the scope of the challenge in real financial terms is, in fact, nearly identical. UW-Madison would take, under Governor Walker's budget, a 13% cut to its base GPR funding. That is equal to about a 2.3% cut to its overall budget. If you look just down the road to Whitewater and the other way to UW-Platteville, the size of the cut is smaller, but relative to their mission and relative to their size as a campus, it's almost identical, about 2.2% of their total budget. So I can't underscore that enough, that we don't have one campus at risk. We have 26, and I think people in Dane County need to remember that while we have about 4,000 Dane County students enrolled at UW-Madison, we have another 6,000 enrolled as UW students everywhere else. And I don't think we should underestimate the impact that this budget will have on their educational experience wherever they enroll, whether they're at River Falls, Stevens Point, Green Bay, or Milwaukee. And to the caller's question about how we've reacted to this, I think we've made some pretty strong public statements. We've had some very detailed discussions about the impact of this. This budget process is not over. We are talking to legislators now, making sure they are cognizant of the impact on our students, our faculty, and staff. And we're trying to be honest about the impact, that this cannot go unnoticed, and that it will have an effect. Now, and in the form of fewer class sections, longer lines, less support, less service available to all of our students in one way or another. So the question then becomes, what do we do about that? If we believe that we'll get more reinvestment from the state, I think we're ignoring the state's real fiscal situation and the political climate in which we operate. I think the one avenue available to us is to try and get some more running room here, some free rein from the state to be able to use those resources more wisely, more efficiently, in ways that allow us to keep good people and serve good students.
Mm-hmm. I would like to address the process issue because I think it has something to do with where we are now. Many people don't realize that forums were being conducted all over the campus during the previous year about a new budget partnership that would have greater flexibility, with ideas being solicited from all of the faculty and staff and students who came to those. As a result of that, there were actually some principles for the new Badger Partnership were drafted by a group that included students, unions, faculty, with the university committee that was adopted by the Faculty Senate. So we had been actively working with the support of President Riley toward this for well over a year. Then what happened is quite typical of what happens in the preparation of a biennial budget. The governor came to us and came to the system with his plans and asked us to provide data that would be useful to inform what would happen under those plans. We had a lot of data to provide. We had been working on it for a year. I understand the system had not quite as full a response available. We were ready to go, and the governor wants to move ahead. I think it's important that we not lose this chance. When we have had a chance to get these things underway, I hope that the UW system will be able to take advantage of those processes and to adapt them to the differing needs of the four-year institutions.
I'm going to move to the other caller who's waiting. Caller in the air.
Thanks. Please acknowledge the class warfare reality of the medical insurance withholding increases. As I understand it, the pension part is 5.8% of salary, wages, whatever. So that is essentially a flat tax on everybody concerned, the public workers. So it's neither progressive nor regressive. On the other hand, the medical insurance sounds like it's going to be X amount, $300, $400 out of every paycheck for every worker. That is extremely regressive. And let me explain, citing three classes, TAs, RAs, LTEs, janitors, cafeteria workers, people who may be getting $15,000 or $20,000 per year versus the superstar research professors and the deans and chancellors who may be getting $100,000 or $120,000 a year versus the super rich, the coaches who are getting $2 to $3 million per year. If you take, say, $300 out of everybody's paycheck every 2 weeks, you're kicking the shit out of the janitors.
Excuse me.
I'm sorry. Trying to tune it down.
I'm going to give you a warning. You cannot use profanity on the air. If you do it again, we will cut you off.
Okay, let me finish up without profanity. This evil increase in medical insurance costs hits the working poor much, much worse than it hits the middle class professors, and they are hit harder than the super rich coaches. Please address that. And how can we have a 1% income tax increase to actually spread the pain around to all of us, the wealthy and the poor alike?
Well, the simple fact is that it doesn't have anything to do with the new Badger Partnership. You're quite right that it will be difficulty for some low-wage workers by having to pay an increased health care provision. But it isn't anything to do with the new Badger Partnership. That's part of the budget repair bill.
Agreed. And the caller does make a fair point that the doubling or tripling of our health insurance premiums does have a disproportionate effect on our lowest paid employees, especially teaching assistants, grad assistants, support staff, custodial staff. That cannot be ignored. That's an example of where a change was made to state employees' benefit structure and benefit plans across the board. Now, in the future, if university chancellors have more latitude, more freedom over the way that our payroll and benefits structure is imposed, and we're not inextricably linked to the fate of other state employees, we might make better or different decisions based on how we look at our employees' total compensation relative to the market and relative to our mission. Now, I can't guarantee that we wouldn't make the same decision sometime in the future, but at least that option would be available to us. Right now, a decision is made to apply uniformly to the DOT, the DNR, the UW, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And it's not that the university is fundamentally better or more important than any of those other institutions, or that our people are better, smarter, or more important than any of them. The fact is we're different, and we need to acknowledge those differences between higher education, between various arms of the state government, and we need to make choices and understand what those consequences are. And if the consequences are that we lose talented people in key functions that prohibit us, and the loss of those people prohibits us from serving our students and fulfilling our mission, then we have a real serious problem. In fact, to bring yet another English reference into here, one of our chancellors had a meeting the other day with his campus faculty to discuss all these wide-ranging issues. And the chair of his English department stood up and said, you know, just about every faculty member in our department is retirement age or beyond. And you should know, Chancellor, we're all thinking of leaving today. So what happens when an entire academic department at a four-year university empties out overnight? What happens to those students? How do we begin to fill that gap? So these are the consequences that we have to talk about, and we have to understand, you know, not just how they affect the employees, that's important, but how do they affect our students? How do they affect our state when we do or do not have the capacity to prepare people for the 21st century knowledge economy?
Yeah, those are all good points. I'm kind of curious. We do have three callers who are waiting, and I want to give people a chance to participate in our conversation. The point you made, David, about the individual campuses having more flexibility and being potentially more responsive to our lower wage workers is one I hadn't heard voiced before. So I appreciate you addressing that issue. I do wonder, though, you know, the people at the universities who are competitive, you know, are our faculty more than and some of our staff at the higher levels and, mm-hmm. and the janitors and the TAs, maybe a little less so. Maybe some of the star students who might come in would be able to negotiate something better. But with the loss of collective bargaining, I'm wondering whether or not the potential to address that is, in fact, lost. Again, collective bargaining is not part of New Badger Partnership, but looking more broadly, can those workers really negotiate for reduced pension contributions or reduced contributions to health insurance payments?
You've really asked a good question there, and that's extremely important. I'd like to reassure our teaching assistants, project assistants, that the interests of the faculty and the interests of the teaching assistants and project assistants go in exactly the same direction. The University of Wisconsin-Madison is in competition for the best students. We would be the last to want to make the package worse for our TAs, RAs, and PAs. We need to be able to have the freedom to make it better. And that is, I think, one of the very important things that would be forthcoming from this.
Mm-hmm. David, do you want to contribute at all?
No, I think Dr. Pondrum hit it right on the head. I think that, you know, people forget often that we compete on a number of fronts. We compete for the best professors. We compete for outside grants and contracts. We compete for other funding from philanthropic and private sources. And we compete for students on a number of fronts. Again, at different campuses, on different levels, with different other peers. But that competition is real, and we should do nothing to disadvantage any of our campuses in ways that ultimately harm our state.
Sure. We don't compete, though, for our janitorial staff, though. I mean, there will be people who potentially economically will suffer, and the enhanced flexibility of the individual campuses may not necessarily operate to address the ways in which they're suffering economically. because they simply don't have the competitiveness in terms of, you know, having someplace else to go.
But we shouldn't underestimate the fact that just about everybody on this campus and every other campus touches the lives of our students one way or another. If their residence halls and academic facilities are not clean and well-kept and well-maintained, it's going to impact their educational experience. If the people working at the library and the cafeteria are not well-compensated and in a high state of morale, then that's going to affect the experience they have as a UW student. And we should never lose sight of that.
Okay. I think now we have four people waiting to join the conversation. So I'll ask everyone who's asking a question to try not to belabor your point and be concise so that everyone has an opportunity to be heard. Caller, you're on the air.
Is that me?
Yes, go right ahead, please.
Thank you. What caught my ear was when you were saying that, David, you were saying that you didn't think the competition between the different universities, serious competition would be a good thing. And my concern is you keep hearing these words, the mission of the universities and the benefit of people and students. And it seems to me that over the last 30 years and certainly in the last 15 years, UW-Madison and in particular and research institutions like that everywhere has become a cheap way to develop profits for people who are getting patents and a cheap way for large corporations to have research done. And it's getting much, and, you know, sports teams, all this type of stuff. It's basically revolves around money, and it doesn't revolve around preparing people to think intelligently about what is the best way to move forward in a very complex society. And I mean, biotechnology is a perfect example. You're looking at what's going on in Japan. And I can guarantee you that the consequences of the biotechnology run rampant will come to be seen. And I don't see the universities preparing students at all to say, what direction are we going in? It's simply, wherever the money is where we're going. And so I don't think that the mission of the university is at all what it purports to be.
Okay.
Since I teach English, I find that practically every class deals with issues of analysis of values and which way we should be going. So in my section of the university, I think, doesn't reflect the caller's concern.
Not making a lot of money in the English department.
No, but I do want to address the issue of patents. He may not know that the patents that are held by university faculty are largely assigned to the Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation, which is the source of the major support from gifts to the university.
Tanya, if I can just answer this
Sure.
from a totally different perspective, from a very personal perspective, I'm aware of research going on the UW-Madison campus that, in fact, is research that will not occur in the private sector, and it's vitally important. My wife and I have set up a fund at the UW Foundation to support epilepsy research here at UW. And we've learned over the years that this is exactly the kind of basic research that is of no interest to the major pharmaceutical companies that will nonetheless perhaps potentially lead to meaningful breakthroughs for people with epilepsy. So I guess I would challenge the caller's assertion that even our largest research enterprise here at UW-Madison has in any way forsaken its very public mission and is you know, sort of selling out to the corporate interests. To the contrary, I think it's filling a gap in many areas where the private interests are so focused on the discoveries that will lead to the biggest profits over the shortest amount of time, that it is the role of public universities to fill in with the basic research, the bench research that informs the debate going forward, that leads us to things that may not necessarily be as commercially viable right away, but are fundamentally vital to our health and our society and our economy.
Okay. I'll turn to the next caller now. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, is that me?
Yes, go right ahead.
Okay, wonderful. I guess I'd like to get back to another issue that I'm concerned about, is that by giving UW-Madison more autonomy, you're giving an institution autonomy, and as far as I'm concerned, UW-Madison already has way too much autonomy, and that's really what needs to be cut back. You have an institution that has no accountability except to the chancellor, and that's permitted to operate a police force that has gotten far in excess of any legitimate campus safety needs. You have a university that, through the administrative process, is able to essentially enact laws that far exceed the provisions of the state statutes. Through the Dean of Students' Office, you have a judiciary process, which is equally unfair. And I think we have to look at these issues and find out why these institutions or these specific components of the institution have been allowed to expand as much as they have and need to be both better scrutinized as well as pared down. I agree with the previous caller on some of his points. There certainly obviously is a gap between the salaries enjoyed by support staff and those enjoyed by the senior administrators. My own opinion is that there is very little excuse for anyone on the campus payroll to be making, at least from the state general fund, to be earning more money than the governor. And I think that paying the overly high salaries is little more than a symbol of arrogance. And I guess those are some of my suggestions, and I'll take my answers off the air. Thanks for taking the call.
Thanks for calling in.
Well, Tanya could probably respond better than I. There isn't anything that university administrative practices do that can be contrary to state law.
David, did you want to address any of
that? Well, and I'm guessing that what we're talking about here is the Student Code of Conduct and what are Chapter 17 and 18 of the State Administrative Code that apply to the Code of Conduct on university campuses by anyone, and specifically to our students' Code of Conduct. Those were recently revised. They were the subject of a great deal of legislative scrutiny and many, many public forums. A lot of concern expressed on both sides about providing a safe, secure environment for our students to live and learn in, and at the same time preserve personal liberties. And I personally believe that those rules strike a nice balance. As a parent who will someday send my three daughters off to college somewhere, I want to know that violent offenders, people who pose a direct threat to the student body, are people who are kindly invited to not pursue their higher education here anymore. As a taxpayer, I want to make sure that those are fair. And as a university administrator, I'm very aware of how deliberative a process we used to arrive at them, and that process included the state legislator and our elected officials. So I hear the caller's concerns. I think a closer examination would reveal that in fact we've got a pretty good set of guidelines on hand.
Okay, we'll go to the next caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Thank you for having this program. Is that me on the
yes.
air?
Yes, it is you.
And thank the guests so much for appearing on WERT. I really appreciate this. I think if we look at this struggle between Walker and the labor unions in a larger context, it seems part of what Jared Diamond talks about in his books, talking about the collapse of civilizations, and that it seems to be a epic struggle between an industry that is keeping society from transferring to renewable energy, specifically the petroleum industry. For example, if you look at the David Koch and Koch Industries involvement in Walker's campaign, could the guests talk about, and this is a request, but if they know of information where people could help in this effort, I'd appreciate knowing about it. Wouldn't it be beautiful to see UW-Madison be a leader in bringing renewable energy to our society? For example, what if a person were able to drive down University Avenue and see almost every building have photovoltaic panels on top of them? And how can we promote renewable energy at UW-Madison? Thank you.
Okay, thanks for your call.
This probably is unrelated to the New Badger Partnership, but there are a number of research enterprises going on at Madison that seek to find new and more efficient ways to extract energy from renewable sources. I was just buying a new car not long ago, and I found that the UW was a partner with the Ford Motor Company because the automotive engineering research here had so efficiently resulted in the reduction of gasoline miles per hour. So that's just one very concrete example of the kinds of things that are going on at Madison right now. I think that's very important.
David?
I'd say that that same commitment exists on every one of our UW campuses. UW-Madison won one of the largest federal grants in history to pursue renewable energy and bioenergy. But even in places like UW-Oshkosh, where they're installing a biodigester that will be both a teaching and learning facility for students in the sciences and a renewable energy source for the campus and a place to take food scraps from the cafeteria rather than putting them in a landfill and actually turn them into energy. So I think if you look at places like UW-Stevens Point, UW-Green Bay, and UW-Madison, you'll see that, in fact, that research is taking place in various ways, in various levels of scale. But it's certainly an area where our students have a very, very strong commitment. I know in several instances recently where students have voted on student-funded projects like the new Student Center at UW-River Falls to actually increase the budget of the project and increase the amount of money they would contribute to it so that the building could incorporate new green energy standards and green building standards. So it's something that that is a shared interest by our faculty, our staff, and our students.
I just want to remind our listeners, we're talking today about the new Badger Partnership, which has been proposed by Chancellor Biddy Martin, the Chancellor of the UW-Madison campus. With us today are our guests, Professor Serena Pondran. She's a professor of English at University of Wisconsin-Madison, and David Giroux. He is the executive director of the Communications and External Relations Office in UW System. So we're talking about the UW's new Badger Partnership proposal, some of the questions that have been raised, some of the implications, and the counterproposal that the UW system has proposed, the Wisconsin Idea Partnership. Please feel free to call in and join our conversation. The number at the station is 256-2001. We have about 8 minutes left and I think three or four calls. So please, everyone, try to be concise. We will try to get to everyone if at all possible. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello, is this me?
Yes, it is.
Okay, my first question is, wouldn't it be nice to have various opinions? It's great to have the opinions of university staff and those who are, probably collecting pretty exorbitant salaries. That's my first part. It would be nice to have someone on the opposite side who has specific experience dealing with tax revenues and costs associated with research that's pretty much insignificant. When you look at that, what the rate of what the taxpayers are paying for ivory tower slash interest, especially the corporate interest, one has to ask themselves, is this really worth what the taxpayer is paying, especially when you look at the salaries of UW-Madison personnel? So that's my first question in terms of, is this really sustainable, and is it really the best value for taxpayer money? And I would say it's probably not. That's my only comment.
Okay.
At the present time, 18% of the support of the UW-Madison budget comes from the state. All the rest comes either from federal grants, from tuition, from gifts, and from earnings on patents and other related income.
And I want to just add to that, I have some additional data on state expenditures. In Wisconsin, nearly 14 cents for every state dollar in the 1980-81 budget went to UW system. Today, that figure is closer to 8 cents, even though the system educates 20,000 more students than it did three decades ago. So we have had a declining amount of state expenditures directed towards UW system. The caller is raising the question about, is this the best expenditure of our state dollars on higher education, and seems to be connecting it mostly with faculty salaries. course, that's going to hit a nerve with me. Well, I think that maybe the faculties in the university system could do a better job of letting the public know how our salaries compare with peer institutions. Maybe David could talk a little bit about that, because even though the salaries might look high relative to other state employees, we're talking about competing with other schools for qualified faculty.
So it really is a very difficult subject for us to talk about. I'll point to a study that you can find on our website. We convened a group of business leaders from outside the university called the president appointed a competitive university workforce commission. They took a very analytical approach to this. It included people like Sue Marks, who was actually part of Governor Walker's transition team, and Kathy Seifert, a former Kimberly-Clark executive, Craig Culver's of the fast food fame, and a few others. And what they found was what we've always found every time we do one of these studies, and that is that institution by institution, relative to our specific peer groups, that salaries at UW-Milwaukee are way behind their peer urban universities. Salaries at UW-Madison are way behind those at comparable research universities. Even salaries at our two-year colleges like UW-Baraboo and UW-Richland are not only behind other two-year colleges, including the local tech colleges, in some cases, we have college professors at our two-year campuses making less than the local high school teachers. Now, I'm not saying the high school teachers should earn less, but I'm saying we need to value what university faculty contribute to our youth, to our future, to our economy. They do that in a number of ways, and to build on the statistic that you threw out, Tanya, in the next 2 years, the cents on the dollar for taxpayers will go even lower. In other words, over the next 2 years, taxpayers will be contributing about 6 cents of every tax dollar to higher education, to the University of Wisconsin system in total, down from 14 cents just a couple decades ago. And the corresponding shift will get to a point where, even as an entire system, our total budget will be less than 24% from state sources. You already heard Professor Pondrum say, even at UW-Madison, it's already lower than 20, about 18%. So, it begs the question then already, what's left about our public university that's still public if it's not public funding? And, recently the head of Berkeley in California made a speech where he offered the position that his university is now essentially a federal university because it receives the vast majority of funding from the federal government in various ways.
Mm-hmm.
So these are important questions for us to ask. Again, I would encourage your listeners, as taxpayers and citizens, to ask that question not just from a Madison-centric point of view, but as state citizens, as state taxpayers, and ask ourselves, what's good for our public university, for all 182,000 students who enroll somewhere with the dream of putting their college degree to use and creating a better life for themselves and their children?
Sure. We'll go to the next caller. We have about 4 minutes left. Caller, you're on the air. Caller? Yes, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. And
please be concise.
Yep, I'm concerned about the governance structure that's been proposed, with the governor getting 11 appointees and the governor not having shown a lot of hesitation to use the levers to suit political ends. I'm just concerned that the change in the governance mm-hmm. could put the university at risk.
I think a lot of people have raised that concern, and so I'm assuming that Professor Pondrum can address that.
Yes. Appointees will include individuals who are specifically selected by groups associated with the UW-Madison. For example, there will be two faculty members appointed by the faculty, one non-faculty employee appointed by non-faculty groups, one student selected by student purposes, two representatives of the Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation selected by that Board of Trustees, two from the Wisconsin Alumni Association, and two from the UW Foundation. These are individuals who are responsible to the University of Wisconsin-Madison, not primarily responsible to the governor. It is hard to imagine that the dynamic on that board would be one in which the board would be addressing anything other than the interests of the institution.
David, did you want to add anything to that?
Well, one... My experience has been that regents appointed by Governor Tommy Thompson, Governor Scott McCallum, Governor Jim Doyle, have, I remember Governor Thompson saying, you know, I appoint these people as regents, and then they get up to the big boardroom, and I never hear from them again. I think his point was that they very quickly embraced their university role as governance leaders. And so I think whether they're appointed to a new UW-Madison Board of Trustees or to a UW System Board of Regents, I would hope that history would repeat itself, that they would become our advocates and our leaders, regardless of which party they come from or which governor appoints them. I do think that a unified governance structure benefits us as a state.